a babysitter. Put on your pants. Come out with your hands up.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth. Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show. Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows? Who knows? Those are the plains of silence.
Did you hear about Trump?
Truth, the half-truth, and nothing of the truth. Veritas News, now with Sal Manella.
Good evening, this is Sal Manella with the Veritas News. Former U.S. attorney in New York fired by President derelict Trump for getting too close to evidence that would lead to the commander-in-chief's indictment. Preet Bharara fired back a tweet himself recently, saying, quote, "If Steve Bannon had been Joe Bannon, would our president have called him Sloppy Joe?" End quote. While thousands gave the Bharara tweet a ha-ha like, President derelict Trump gave it a resounding ho-ho, admitting that Bannon, whom he now calls Sloppy Steve, was named in reference to the amount of spit and saliva the Breitbart Nazi drooled out of his mouth while giving the president derelict a blowjob. The BJ was an attempt by Bannon to convince Trump not to fire him and oust him from the White House. Bannon, crying while begging for his job, had already been on his knees in front of Trump. Sources say when Bannon's hysteria didn't work, he began, shall we say, serving the president, since he was already taking not one but both knees, and his face was eye level with America's first dictator. With Bannon's begging, crying, and sucking failing, Sloppy Steve made his best and final offer. He invited the president derelict to pee on him, quote, like in Moscow, end quote. Reportedly, Trump dismissed the alt-Reich's fallen leader, saying, sad Steve, go away, you may be just a peon now, but you don't deserve my golden showers, end quote. Reportedly, the scene in the Oval Office became even too outrageous for King Khan. White House staffers were summoned to quell the emotional mayhem in an attempt to, at least, stop the pleading. Needing someone of equal girth and grotesqueness as Bannon, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was called in. She physically dragged Bannon out of the Oval Office. Meanwhile, Kellyanne Conjob finished Bannon's sloppy blowjob, though reportedly, she convinced Trump not to pee on her in hopes of salvaging the women's vote. Grief-stricken, Bannon, presently just the average Joe, is now seen by most of the nation not so much as Sloppy Steve, but rather as Morning Joe. His troubles are doubled now since billionaire and trial study participant for alopecia medication, Rebecca Mercer, wielded her power and ousted Bannon as head of Breitbart News. Like Ms. Mercer's hairline, the alt-Reich neo-Nazi, ultra-right-wing fascist wannabe editor Steve Bannon will hopefully quickly recede from public spotlight. While we here at Veritas News make it a practice to avoid even entertaining suggestions given to us by the management, Savino Veritas, host and CEO of Savino Veritas, Tom Savino, has respectfully asked our news department to acknowledge CBS's Stephen Colbert and Colbert's fine writing staff, who identified Steve Bannon as, quote, Breitbart editor-in-chief and spoiled hamburger meat that wants to be a real boy, end quote. Given the right-on accuracy of the description, we've decided the line is appropriate for the news. President derelict's son, Don Jr., is being described by Trump as just as stable as he, while Trump himself is surely seen as the lead witness in the Mueller investigation. Jr. is seen, too, as key, keeping in line with the theme of stables that would make Jr. the Don Key. While Trump, of course, is still the front-running nag in this race, the race to the finish of either the Russian investigation or the Trump regime itself, Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has instructed his staff to prepare for Trump's upcoming face-to-face testimony. In another unprecedented move in this administration, like no other, Mueller has asked his staff to make sure Trump, the so-called self-named stable genius, has plenty of feed bags full of grain on hand during the testimony. Legal experts and pundits say that Mueller's calling in of large amounts of feed grain suggest the stable genius will be made to testify under oath. This has been Sal Manila with the Veritas News. Now here's Tom Savino with Savino Veritas.
Savino Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Good evening. Alfred Hitchcock here. Not really, Tom Savino here, coming to you from Burbank, California. Maybe Alfred Hitchcock was in Burbank, California. I'm sure he was, as many directors are, and were, and will be. This is Savino Veritas, coming to you live from Burbank, California. 299 days before November the 6th, 2018, Election Day. Thank you, Sal Manila. Sal Manila, Savino Veritas News, the Veritas News. This is Tom Savino coming to you from Burbank, California.
If I may be so blunt, who gives a shit?
And, well, Sal Manila certainly went full adult content there. Reporting the Veritas News, he's certainly playing to the blue states. I'm sure the opposition would say he's playing to the cheap seats. Given the nature of our audience, no one will complain that here at Savino Veritas, we have possibly dehumanized Kellyanne Conway.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
More than her own deceit and hypocritical words and constant bullshit has already. Conway, or Con Job, as my fellow snowflakes and I like to call her, rightfully so, I think, is a victim of her own self-dehumanization. Con Job, she is a well-paid bot, who is no better than Saudi Arabia's Sophia, the world's first robot citizen for whom real flesh and blood Saudi Arabian women have so rightfully complained. The clearly male-designed Sophia of Saudi Arabia, I suspect, is not void of a flesh-like and soft labia.
They never have sex with just the vagina. You have to have sex with the whole woman.
For which the male Arab techies can dick down when they please, no doubt. Sometime I'll have to do a show on Seth. Seth Speaks, the spirit entity who spoke through Jane Roberts, a writer, back in the late 70s and early 80s. The Seth books were bestsellers. I got a chance to have Seth, the spirit entity, speak privately to me about me.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, you betcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
And give me a reading, as they say. And Seth, the spirit entity, speaking through some human being, not Jane Roberts, but some other human of whom I now have forgotten, told me that I, in fact, lived as a male in Atlantis and built attractive, seductive female robots for my pleasure and the pleasure of other males in Atlantis.
I believe in total equality between man and woman, but that equality can only come about when the female partner is willing to confess her total inferiority.
Somewhere in my archives, otherwise known as a pile of shit in my garage, is an audio cassette with that session. I have to dig that out. Now, there's a Savino Veritas episode waiting to happen. I've got to dig it up and digitize it. Also, I've got to dust off my copies of Seth, the Seth books, where Seth spoke through the flesh and blood person of Jane Roberts. My favorite of those books was The Nature of Personal Reality.
I want to know about this.
I remember a section of that book, in keeping with tonight's focus on sex and adult content, where the entity Seth suggests that the answer to war and general global discontent is our species embracing bisexuality.
What? Oh my.
Whoa, what?
I have to dig that up, and we'll do that in the near future in Seth. Dig up my Seth books and talk about that. Anyway, now that I've whetted your appetite, men, and now that I've gotten you all wet, women.
I was hoping you'd give me a bath. I'm very, very dirty.
Let's get back to the flesh and blood Kellyanne Conway.
Aren't you embarrassed?
So, satirically speaking, having Conway finish off the fictitious sloppy blowjob started by Steve Bannon.
You don't even know what you're talking about. Try getting it out. Go ahead.
Heard in Salmonella's reporting, the noose. Did I go too far?
No!
Is that sexist?
Hello, master.
It's hard for a male today.
I want to know about this.
To know when a woman will say, me too.
I don't know!
Back off. You're it. You're shit. You're on the shit list. You're out of here.
You bet your ass.
Give me your pay. Give me everything. Will Kellyanne cry, me too, for being the target of our admittedly off-color satire?
You bet your ass.
I don't know.
Oh, that's a shame.
Again, on the subject of future Savino Veritas episodes, I'd like to invite back one of our more popular guests of the past, Susan Bremmer O'Neill. Author of From Sex Appeal to Self Appeal. Susan was a stripper or exotic dancer.
Nice beaver.
At so-called gentlemen's clubs back in the day, and has learned for herself how to find one's own value, especially as a woman.
So tell me you love me. Please, 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 please. Tell me. Oh, tell me.
In presenting one's own gifts to the world, other than one's own sex appeal and looks. When I think back on having Susan on the show a couple of years ago, I remember how flirtatious I was to her. She's very attractive. By today's standards, I'd be out of here in a New York minute given the suggestive quips I made when she was on the air with me. Now, just today, while getting in my parked car, making sure my Starbucks was secure in my cup holder, holding, as it were, the last cup of Christmas blend of the season until late November 2018.
Who gives a shit?
As I got myself together in my parked car at the Empire Center in Burbank, I saw this lovely young woman who I saw eating her lunch alone in front of a Mediterranean takeout restaurant. She sat in profile, her left side facing me. I noticed how lovely she was. But I've got to tell you, she turned me on, totally. She didn't know I existed, and if she had, I have no delusion that she'd care if I existed at all.
You're not much of a bargain, you know. You're conceited and thoughtless and messy.
But there she sat, with her great posture, in full profile. And as is still my tendency. My line of vision ran down her back to her well-formed, gray-colored, jean-clad butt, which offered me a very pleasant view while I was pulling out of my parking spot, pulling out, I mean.
Use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
As I slowly drove away, I thought, was she some sort of victim? Was I making her some sort of victim? Beyond my testosterone-induced tendencies to ogle this woman?
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
Ogle.
You would need 3 promotions to get to be an asshole.
I did think. She's someone's daughter. She's someone's sister. She may be someone's mother someday, if she wasn't already. Additionally, she's maybe a student, maybe an employee. Ultimately, she's a fellow human being.
The human beings, my son.
I left feeling a little guilty.
I'll object to that, Your Honor.
Then I thought, I'm going to be 68 this year.
Believe it or not.
Imagine if I were 32. I realized, if I were 32, any attempt at reacting to this scrumptious being sitting there, just innocently trying to enjoy her lunch while looking at her phone screen, any attempt at seeing this fellow human being, this fellow soul, this fellow creature of the universe, any attempt at seeing her as anything other than an object just there for my visual enjoyment.
Jerk, 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 jerk.
Fantasy fulfillment.
Welcome to Fantasy Island.
Or worse, actually, verbal and or physical contact and possibly harassment and abuse.
How you doing?
Any attempt at that might be impossible. Young heterosexual men, I don't envy these times in which you must navigate with the opposite sex. If I were younger, I'd have to say regarding your frustration and careful approach to the female today, me too.
Of Atlantis was an island which lay before the great flood in the area we now call the Atlantic Ocean. So great an area of land that from her western shores those beautiful sailors journeyed to the south and the North Americas with ease in their ships with painted sails. To the east, Africa was her neighbor, across a short strait of sea miles. The great Egyptian age is but a remnant of the Atlantean culture. The antediluvian kings colonized the world. All the gods who play in the mythological dramas, in all legends from all lands, were from fair Atlantis. Knowing her fate, Atlantis sent out ships to all corners of the earth. On board were the 12. The poet, the physician, the farmer, the scientist, the magician, and the other so-called gods of our legends, though gods they were. And as the elders of our time choose to remain blind, let us rejoice and let us sing and dance and ring in the new. Hail Atlantis!
You ever lose your memory in the shower? That's scary. You ever in your shower and you're daydreaming and then you can't remember if you shampooed your hair? I had to backtrack in my shower. What did I feel squeaky. What did I do? I got in the shower and then I sang Piano Man. I always sing Piano Man. And then I started. You know what I do in my shower now? I bring a checklist in. Just check it off as you're, all right, I did that. All right, I'll do that. Oh. Oh, I'm not going to have time for that. Oh. I'll do that twice tomorrow. Men know what I'm talking about. Come on. Are we ashamed? What are we ashamed of? It's healthy. It's healthy, that's what it is. Just keep telling yourself that. It's healthy. Just trying to be healthy. That's how we justify it. Here's how I justify it. Here's why men do that a lot. It's like entrapment. We have the ability for these fantasies. We don't want them. I know women fantasize, but you have no idea what men have. They're capable of. There's like a cast of thousands in there. You need like a director in your head. Just, all right, he's in the shower. Showtime. Let's go, ladies. Gather around. Show's going to start any second. We have a new cast member today. You want to introduce yourself? Julie. Oh, hi, Julie. How are you? How'd you get here? Oh, he saw you bend down in the subway. Okay. All right. Well, that's all it takes. Well, good. Welcome aboard. Nice to have you with us. Nice to have you with us, Julie. Are you bisexual? Well, you are now. Yeah, just play along, you know, because the better you are, the quicker we're all out of here, really. Just give them a good show. Oh, why? Why do we do that material? Because it's true.
Do you remember last summer at Cape Cod?
Kidman.
Yes.
Cruise.
I wake up at night seeing that man fall from the roof and I try to reach out to him.
Stewart.
It wasn't your fault.
Novak. Now, new technology has been able to blend Hitchcock and Kubrick in a mixing and a blend of the sensational and sensual new version of the 60s classic.
There is something very important that we need to do as soon as possible.
What's that?
Choose between uncut and circumcised. Get it now. Hitchcock, Kubrick's Pervertigo.
This is the artist D from ForCulture.com. In Wine the Truth? I believe so. You're listening to Tom Savino on SRN1 live. But be sure to hop over to JuicedTalk.com to download after this broadcast. That's JuicedTalk.com. Now, Tom, pour me another glass of wine and get back on my radio.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, spread eagle.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
Jesus. JuicedTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne Marie from Up All Night on 4Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Testosterone high?
Use some Tic Tac just in case they start kissing.
Use Tic Tac. But what about that temper?
Well, Rosie O'Donnell's disgusting. She's a slob. She talks like a truck driver. Probably I'll sue her because it would be fun. I'd like to take some money out of her fat ass pockets.
When you're over the edge, try Temperaments.
I have a couple of days because I like to know what I'm talking about before I speak.
Temperaments.
It's here. That democracy we've been waiting to get our hands on. Introducing the new City Bill, the bill by bankers for bankers. Sure, it's a regular last-minute budget bill that just barely keeps the government from shutting down, but it's also your ticket to financial freedom. Here at Citigroup, we know financial reform is about as appealing as testifying before Congress on subprime mortgages. That's why CityBill dismantles reform bit by socialist bit. Once again, you'll be able to revel in the most complex derivative schemes your creative mind can dream up, all with the security of knowing American taxpayers have got your back in the highly unlikely event you fail. After all, 2008 was over 100 years ago. There's a reason banks like us just spent more than $1.2 billion to lobby and develop CityBill. We control over 90% of the $700 trillion derivatives market. So let your imagination run wild. Credit default swaps, fraud-backed securities, unicorn dander derivatives, the choice is yours. Wherever your feverish financial mind takes you, with the new CityBill, you've got democracy by bankers for bankers. Past performance is a pretty good guarantee of future results.
Are you tired of people dying around you at your favorite Italian restaurant? Well, worry no more. And forget about it, restaurant. Forget about it. Hey, the gang of Forget About It has found the ultimate silencer and non-bloody assassinations. Hey, you never have to worry about loud sounds, gunfire, people falling over you, bloody people on top of you. Because of the boys that Forget About It have discovered a new way, a silent way of killing. For their assassination victims, they serve them Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatballs. And the victims, they die silently in the bathroom. You got somebody you want out of your hair? Hey, Forget About It. Get them a gift certificate at Forget About It. But make sure you specify they try Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatball or Ebola macaroni. Ebola spaghetti. No gluten-free.
Just about ready for kickoff. Some of the players are kneeling down.
When those ungrateful traitors on the field take a knee,
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Fight back and stake a knee. Don't take a knee. Stake a claim and zap a cap.
Bing!
A kneecap with Stake a Knee. Stake a Knee is an Android or iPhone app developed by AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, Koch Industries, Pepsi, Kellogg's, General Mills, Coca-Cola, Papa John's Pizza, KFC, Budweiser, Hobby Lobby, and more. With your Stake a Knee app, you can zap a laser-sharp corporate logo of any one of those companies and reach tens of millions of NFL TV viewers. Zap on the cap.
Bing.
That's right. Right on the cap of the exposed knee of the un-American protester you hate the most. That's right. Enjoy the feeling of revenge as those half-kneeling ingrates on the field unwittingly spread the comforting message of our shared real American values. And they'll never know it. Imagine Colin Kaepernick beaming out to the world, Nestle Quick on his knee, while you know you put it there with your Stake a Knee. How does it work? Who cares? Don't take a knee. Stake a claim and zap a cap. A kneecap.
Bing.
With Stake a Knee. Don't take a knee. Stake a knee. Right from the comfort of your couch, right at your fingertips. Touch your screen, choose a logo, and zap. Right on the cap of a Suggs, Evans, or Kaepernick knee. When they take a knee, stake a knee.
Bing.
Providers, minutes, and data usage charges will apply while using Stake a Knee. Stake a Knee phone carriers and corporations worldwide are not responsible for disruptions in church services. Should Stake a Knee be used on parishioners during prayer?
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
After 30 years, 30 years, enough is enough. Robert Siegel retired from NPR. This is a segment I really like where he introduces Trump's comic-like speaking from NPR.
No matter what you think about what Donald Trump says, there's no doubt that there's something very unusual about how he says it. Tomorrow, after Trump takes the oath of office, he's expected to deliver a set-piece speech recited from text, not by impulse. But what distinguished him as a campaigner wasn't his talent with the teleprompter. It was a manner of speaking unlike anything we heard from his rivals or his predecessors.
I always joke, I say, we want to see win, 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 constant winning. And you'll say, if I'm president, and you say, please, Mr. President, we're winning too much. We can't stand it anymore. Can't we have a loss? And I'll say, no, we're going to keep winning, 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 because we're going to make America great again. And you'll say, okay, Mr. President, okay.
The way that he talks is as different from any other politician as Barack Obama looked.
Jennifer Murcia is an historian at Texas A&M. She's writing a book on Trump's rhetoric. She says Trump's informal, impulsive style goes over well with his supporters. They hear a man who says what he thinks, not what consultants think he should say.
The idea seems to be that all other politicians are corrupt and that we know that because of the way that they talk to us.
They are canned, prepared, rehearsed. He is spontaneous, authentic, candid. Or at least that's the impression. Professor Murcia says Trump is using rhetoric very strategically. For example, the rhetorical device called paralipses.
Paralipses can be said colloquially as, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. It does this great thing of allowing you a window, supposedly, into what he's really thinking. At the New Hampshire primary, he said, but all of the other candidates are weak.
And they're just weak. I think they're weak generally. You want to know the truth, but I won't say that because I don't want to get myself. I don't want to have any controversy. Is that okay? No controversy. So I refuse to say that they're weak generally, okay?
Right. So he said it 3-4 times. They're weak. But he knows that he shouldn't say that. He's walking you through his thought process. It shows us just how strategic he is about what he says, because he tells you in the middle of saying it that he knows that he ought not to say it and still says it anyway.
We asked Trump supporters around the country how the president-elect sounds to them. No one said he sounds like a politician.
To me, he'd sound like more like a football coach.
That's Ryan Wright in Tipton, Iowa. Here's Ney Vasconcelos in Phoenix.
This is like where I talk with my peers, people that I work with, or whatever.
He seems more like a game show host to me.
That's Mary Nickerson in Nashville.
He does not take the time to think long enough to even lie about anything.
Mark Jampol is not a Trump supporter. He's a blogger and poet in New York City. And he says what Trump really sounds like is a stand-up comedian. He says a typical Trump speech has the structure of a stand-up routine.
Most stump speeches have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and follow classic speech structure, which basically is tell the audience what you're going to say, say it, and then tell them what you just said. Trump doesn't do that. It appears to be free form. Just like a comedian.
What a crowd. What a crowd. How beautiful.
What a crowd. What a crowd. And outside, we have many more people than this outside. It's incredible.
I came home from doing a show the other night. She goes, honey, the dryer's broken.
She said, darling, you're president. You cannot call an air conditioning company. I said, that's okay. It's so much fun.
Even the guy stamping the passports was terrifying. He was like, what is your occupation?
They said, you know, he made that statement. I'd like to take him to the back of the gym.
I just got back from Israel. You know what I'm saying?
I just got back from Florida. I was begging for, like, a regular commercial. Ivory Snow, Heinz Ketchup. Every commercial was a hit on Trump. Hit, hit, hit. And almost all of them were untrue somewhere.
Mark Jampol says Trump's followers hear him as a comic hero, a disruptor.
It was Rodney Dangerfield or Jackie Mason in the Caddyshack movies, where these two comedians played rich guys who were really average Joes breaking down the barriers of elite institutions.
Our Trump supporters didn't describe him that way. In Tipton, Iowa, Jim Thurchka heard in Trump echoes of a real-life figure from his youth.
He kind of reminds me of my Air Force recruiter back when I joined the military. Off color, tend to exaggerate at times to make a point.
He just talks like he's going to be your buddy drinking a beer with you, you know?
That's Matt Benward in Nashville making a point people used to make about George W. Bush.
Hillary just, like, talked down to people. Heck with that.
Jim Thurchka pointed higher in the pantheon of Republican presidents.
He does remind me a little of Ronald Reagan, though Reagan is much more eloquent. I think with time, Donald will come around and speak more presidentially.
But here's a difference between Reagan and Bush, between most politicians and Donald Trump. Other politicians often tell us stories they've heard from ordinary Americans, little object lessons that prove a larger point. In Trump speeches, that hardly ever happens. John Murphy is an associate professor of communication at the University of Illinois. We reached him by Skype.
There's no effort to identify a Joe the plumber. He never, ever does that. He doesn't seem to speak of or meet people personally. It's all a kind of public performance.
Elvin Lim, who teaches political science at the National University of Singapore, says that to cite other people would only detract from Trump's central message, which is all about himself.
He does not need props or analogies or other people to help him tell his tale. He believes that he is almost messianic in his status and ability to be the solution to what America needs to become great again.
I alone can fix it.
It's focused very much about his line and his narrative, and I don't think he takes very kindly to other people helping him make that narrative happen.
Nor, it seems, to facts that run counter to his assertions. Again, John Murphy of the University of Illinois.
Trump relies very much on separating appearance from reality. So it may look like you're getting good health care, but in truth, you don't have any health care options. For Trump, he wants to be the only source of information about himself and in some ways about the world itself.
Again, I will tell you the plain facts that have been edited out of your nightly news and your morning newspaper. Nearly 4 in 10 African-American children are living in poverty, while 58% of African-American youth are now not employed.
And so he's constantly pointing out how the appearances of the world lie to us, that they don't tell the truth. What you think you see is not actually what's going on.
In that case, Trump's assertion of the plain facts flies in the face of federal data. That 58% black youth unemployment figure includes full-time students who aren't looking for work. The Labor Department's unemployment rate for young blacks is 19%. For admirers of Donald Trump, his style works. His facts might not check out, and he might not be especially eloquent, but what supporters, like John Mortensen in Salt Lake City here, is a man unfiltered, speaking his mind.
He doesn't like the BS. I don't like BS. He tells the people straight, so when he's done speaking, I know what he said.
Donald Trump's next public speaking assignment will be his biggest to date by far, his inaugural address tomorrow afternoon at the U.S. Capitol.
I alone can fix it.
When you knew you couldn't fix it alone. And the feds and media aren't kidding. We've got you covered. Penultimate collusion. When the next to last door is wide open, we ensure the final one won't ever shut. With penultimate collusion insurance, you'll get partisan spin by friendly committee reps.
That doesn't help us a lot.
Fake news redirection.
No evidence of anything into five investigations on Capitol Hill. That's a pretty good trick.
And conspiracy theory diversion.
Welcome back to Hannity. Questions continue to swirl around the mysterious murder of DNC staffer Seth Rich.
You can rest securely knowing that a good portion of your premium always goes toward gerrymandering to ensure they'll never be enough votes to impeach you. And with penultimate, regardless of your history of corruption and even obstruction of justice, will never drop you for a pre-existing condition. If there is a there, you can count on our there. Penultimate collusion insurance. We're there when there's a there.
Collusion insurance may void in California, Washington, and Oregon. Coverage does not include active enabling. A shift in party dominance in the Congress and or the Senate may void coverage. Collusion insurance does not cover an act of God should you be struck dead by atmospheric conditions, including but not limited to lightning, mudslides, or flood.
Penultimate collusion. There.
Tied to at least 10 former Soviet businessmen with alleged links to organized crime and money laundering. These are what we would colloquially call mobsters.
Go hard, you're moving too slow. You got to make your empire grow now. Pick up gold and marble stone. Pay off Putin, stealing grainy.
Fat Tony Salerno met with Donald Trump in Roy Cohn's office.
In the early 90s, Trump was almost $1 billion in the red. He took part in a $40 million stock market fraud, boosting shares and then selling them at a profit. A pump-and-dump scam.
You would have thought that Trump was the money behind this project. He wasn't. He was only the face.
And she was married.
Yes, Nadal is good!
Syphilis. Rural dwellers only make for sin.
Yes.
clap, squint. He's in a mellow into the yellow, the lights of Russian heat. He has admitted to sex not permitted and promiscuity. Unprotected, his little icky sores went undetected. Many voters tried to warn the tale of brain but fell.
Start, they let you do it. I gotta do some big thing. Grab him by the pussy.
What Trump's pitch was going to be. He was sure of one thing. It was going to cost the people of Talpa.
Be careful, son. I can sue you.
The President of the United States has a particular skill set that he's identified an illness in Western democracies, but he has no cure for it and seems intent on exploiting it. And we've also learned that he has no desire and no capacity to lead the world. The G20 became the G19 as it ended. On the Paris Climate Accords, the US was left isolated and friendless. But given that that was always going to happen, a deft president would have found an issue around which he could rally most of the leaders. And he had the perfect one, North Korea's missile tests. So where was the G20 statement condemning North Korea, which would put pressure on China and Russia? Other leaders expected it. They were prepared to back it, but it never came. There's a tendency among some hopeful souls to confuse the speeches written for Trump with the thoughts of the man himself. He did make some interesting scripted observations in Poland about defending the values of the West, and he's in a unique position. He's the one man who has the power to do something about it. But it's the unscripted Trump that's real, a man who barks out bile in 140 characters, who wastes his precious days as president at war with the West's institutions like the judiciary, independent government agencies, and the free press. He was an uneasy, lonely, awkward figure at this gathering, and you got the strong sense that some of the leaders are trying to find the best way to work around him. Donald Trump's a man who craves power because it burnishes his celebrity. To be constantly talking and talked about is all that really matters, and there is no value placed on the meaning of words, so what's said one day can be discarded the next. So what did we learn? We learned that Donald Trump has pressed fast forward on the decline of the United States as a global leader. He managed to isolate his nation, to confuse and alienate his allies, and to diminish America. He will cede that power to China and Russia. two authoritarian states that will forge a very different set of rules for the 21st century. Some will cheer the decline of America, but I think we'll miss it when it's gone. And that's the biggest threat to the values of the West, which he claims to hold so dear.
How many times do I have to answer this question? Can you just say Russia yes or no is on a it? Ruse? Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question, so important. Russia is a ruse.
I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I didn't have, not have communications with the Russians.
I didn't take any money from Russia, if you, that's what you're asking me. Did any advisor or anybody in the Trump campaign have any contact with the Russians who were trying to meddle in the election?
Oh, of course not.
Was there any contact in any way between Trump or his associates and the Kremlin or cutouts they had?
Of course not. Why would there be any contacts between the campaign?
We have no relationship. This is an absurd attempt by the Clinton campaign to try and get the focus off of what the real issue is.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
We hear experts. You know, his house cat at home once said that this is what's happening with the Russians. It's disgusting. It's so phony.
Can you say that nobody from the Trump campaign had any involvement with the Russians before, during, or after the campaign?
Yes, I can.
Did anyone involved in the Trump campaign have any contact with Russians trying to meddle with the election?
Absolutely not.
Can he say definitively that nobody in his campaign, nobody that he's been associated with, had any contacts with any Russian agents?
No, first of all, the answer is no, and we don't know of any contacts with Russian agents.
Every man knows her name. Every woman knows her face. When she walks into a room, all eyes are on her. She's Ivanka. And a woman like her deserves a fragrance all her own, a scent made just for her. Because she's beautiful, she's powerful, she's complicit. She's a woman who knows what she wants and knows what she's doing. Complicit. She doesn't crave the spotlight, but we see her. Oh, how we see her. Complicit. A feminist, an advocate, a champion for women. But, like, how? She's loyal, devoted, but probably should have bounced after the whole excess Hollywood bust thing. Oh, well. Also, I bet when she watches Titanic, she thinks she's Rose. Sorry, girl, you're Billy Zane. Complicit, the fragrance for the woman who could stop all this, but won't. Also available in a cologne for Jared.
We're so happy to have you here, and we want to get started, and we want to have a fun show, but we also wanted to take a moment to address what happened this weekend. On Saturday, there was yet another terror attack on American soil. This one was allegedly perpetrated by a white supremacist named James Field against a group of protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia. He drove his car into a crowd and killed a woman named Heather Heyer. It was a horrifying incident that left most of the country stunned and terrified, but on Saturday, you didn't hear her name or the terrorist's name or even the word terrorist from our president. What you heard instead was this.
We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
On many sides. If that choice of words made you feel sick to your stomach, the good news is you're a normal and decent person. The jury is still out on the president as he initially refused to condemn the white supremacist movement in this country. Now, he did read a statement at the White House today that finally struck the right tone. But I'm sorry, pencils down on this subject was Saturday evening. He only gets very partial credit. Some ignored it or played it down when Donald Trump claimed our first black president was born in this country. It was racist and insane, but he was written off as a clown, a bitter little man who didn't know an American could have a name like Barack Obama. Then he called Mexicans rapists during the speech announcing his candidacy. He called Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas. Then he brought Steve Bannon to the White House with him, worked to take away voting rights from black people, and hammered away at the idea that Chicago was a wasteland because of the violent black people living there. And now white supremacists and American Nazis are visible and energetic and demonstrative in a way we've not seen in our lifetimes. Donald Trump did not immediately denounce the white supremacist movement when given the chance. And now, whether he knows it or not, many of those people see him as leading that movement. The leader of our country is called the president because he's supposed to preside over our society. His job is to lead, to cajole, to scold, to correct our path, to lift up what is good about us, and to absolutely and unequivocally and immediately condemn what is evil in us. And if he does not do that, if he does not preside over our society, then he is not a president. You can stand for a nation or you can stand for a hateful movement. You can't do both. And if you don't make the right choice, I am confident that the American voter will. Thank you, guys.
Yes, that's Seth Speaks. Seth Speaks, but that Seth is Seth Meyers. And yes, the American voter, that's you and me. 299 days. As a matter of fact, in a couple of minutes, it'll be 298 days until Election Day, November the 6th, 2018. Get this scum out of America. This is Tom Savino saying, I may be joking, but I'm never kidding. Join us again every Thursday on Savino Veritas and 24/7 at ChooseToTalk.com. Peace.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.